up, geeks?
And welcome to another episode of Fantastic Geeks.
And where to find them.
I'm Brizzy Voices.
And I'm Tessa Netting. In today's episode, we have a very special guest here with us, our very good friend, Jackie Emerson.
Hi.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you very much.
Jackie is an actress, singer, writer, public speaker, and fellow boss lady who is always doing a million different projects, and I'm extremely impressed by her always.
No.
You are like a girl crush of mine, seriously.
Stop.
No, you are.
I'm honored. The feeling is mutual.
So incredible. She does it all, folks. And you probably know her as Foxface from The Hunger Games.
Yes. Jackie, could you please start off by telling the people listening your Hogwarts house and just a little about you?
Oh, hi, everybody. So I'm a Gryffindor, though that was a devastating realization because my whole life I thought I was a Ravenclaw.
Oh,
I had
wow.
all the Ravenclaw gear because
we
I was
were
like,
opposites.
I'm Luna. Did you think you were Gryffindor your
I
whole
did.
Life?
I did.
You should have just traded merch.
We should have traded.
We should have traded.
Missed
Dang
opportunity.
It. Dang it. And then I found out I was a Gryffindor. And then the more I found out about Gryffindor, the more I was like, I'm totally a Gryffindor.
You are such a Gryffindor.
Yeah.
But like a Hermione Gryffindor.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I'm like a Gryffindor with like Ravenclaw rising. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ravenclaw rising.
Though somebody told me the other day, they were like, Jackie, I think you're a little more Slytherin than you realize because you're so ambitious. And I was like, my head exploded because I always get the lowest on that. I always get like Gryffindor,
no,
Ravenclaw.
No, but you will not like take driven. The means necessary. You know what I mean? You do the right thing.
Mm.
That's what it is. You're ambitious, but you do
that.
It the right way.
I very much appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, I always wonder if secondary house is your rising sign or your moon sign. Or
we were
what?
Just talking
that's what
about
I feel
this.
Like it is. Maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Because my
Cause
moon
I'm a,
is Scorpio.
I'm a Leo. Oh, you're a Scorpio.
My moon is Scorpio, which is totally Slytherin.
Oh,
my sun sign is Virgo, which is totally Ravenclaw, but my rising is Aries, so that's totally Gryffindor.
I don't know what my the difference between my rising and my moon sign is. All I know is that my normal sign is Leo, which just so falls into line.
Oh, it's my God.
Not even fun. And then the red hair, you know. It's just, it's so obvious.
It is, yeah.
I feel like part of the Gryffindorness, too, is like how much I didn't want to be the same as everybody else because everybody says that they're Gryffindor. And so I was like, I don't want to be a Gryffindor because everybody's a Gryffindor. And then I was like, damn, that's a really Gryffindor thing to say. So
you're like descendant of Godric Gryffindor.
Yeah.
So true.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man. But it's like in the best way. So you love Harry Potter very much.
I love Harry Potter.
Yeah. And that's kind of how like we like sort of
connected.
Met. Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to tell or I'll tell the story of where we actually first
yeah,
met?
Yeah, tell the story.
Because it's
so
ridiculous.
Funny.
So I was at Whimsic Alley at a Hunger Games fan thing, like dinner thing. And Jackie was there and I was with Pat and I was dressed as Katniss.
Yep.
And I met Jackie, you dressed as Katniss.
And then we hung out a few months later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was where I met Joe, and
uh-huh.
I remember that you had Daniel Radcliffe on a necklace.
That just sounds like a little, like, figure of
Daniel. It was like his head. It was like a bust of Daniel Radcliffe. And
yes.
I remember I saw that and we started talking and then it was like, oh, we're going to be best friends. And then that was
and that was it.
The rest was history.
The bust of Daniel Radcliffe brought us together.
The bust of Daniel Radcliffe. As it always does.
As
with all true friendships.
Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe is in the center of all friendship.
His bust specifically.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, so funny. So good. And then you guys met through me?
Yeah,
must have been. I think through VidCon, maybe, because I was your guest.
Oh, right. I brought you to VidCon.
I came with you, and then we met, maybe. We just
it
similar
It was definitely
circles.
Through Tessa. And then, yeah, we've definitely been at other places.
Yeah, we're like, friends.
We are friends, too.
Yes,
yeah.
All friends together. Yay. Okay, Jackie, now we want to start out talking about, like, how you started and, like, where did your background, like, come into, like, performing? How did you, like, were you just born an actress? Did you know, like, out of the womb, singing and dancing?
Wearing tap shoes.
Wearing, like, ready to go.
Hello, world. It's me.
Most Gryffindor baby.
Oh, my gosh. That would be the most Gryffindor baby.
We all just want attention.
Yeah. So how did you, like, start out?
Well, let's see. I grew up. I was born in D.C. and then came to L.A. And I always was doing, like, little performance-y things.
See? Knew it.
Around the house. When I was four, most notably, I started doing piano lessons. Mm. And I loved it. And I liked, you know, doing things along with that. But I still wasn't, you know, I was four. I wasn't really in my realm of, like, thinking about anything. But I was clearly a musical child. So I was five and a half. I remember this very clearly. I was in kindergarten. It was a big deal. And my friend, Sophie Turner, haven't spoken to her in about 20 years,
but
still remember the first name, last name, was going to be in Annie at one of the theaters in L.A. And I said to my parents, I want to be in Annie too. And my mom was scared that I was going to like fall flat on my face in the auditions and be super embarrassed because I'd never sung before, like around the house or anything. So she got me one singing lesson to sing tomorrow. And the singing teacher was like, she should do this. Like, she should do this. And mom was like, burr, burr, burr. So anyway, I go in for the audition for Annie. And I loved it. Like, I had the best time. I got cast as Duffy. And I remember I had a solo, like one-line solo. I didn't even know what a solo was. I remember being like, what's a solo? Everybody was like, this is a really big deal, you know. And so I got the solo. I had one-line solo. It was very exciting. And immediately got the performance bug. And I was like, I have to do this. So then my mom let me enroll in this theater, summer theater
program.
And
how old were you when you did?
I was like six.
Wow.
It was like five and a half, six. It was a children's theater group in L.A.
Right.
So then she enrolled me in, my parents, whatever. They had me do this. It was called CTGSC. And it was the Children's Theater Group of Southern California.
Wow.
And I also did, they had a summer program at Campbell Hall called CAPS, and it was like a musical theater performing arts
camp. Oh, fun.
And I just like dove into theater, and I did a million plays and musicals with CTGSC. I did stuff with some other random kids theater
groups. What are
groups
your
in
top
LA?
Three favorite musicals?
Like of all time or that I was in?
Both.
Oh my god.
Okay, not of like top, just like ones that you like.
Oh, I got it. I've got the number one that was both that I was in and that's my favorite musical
Perfect.
Of all time. Sunday in the Park with George by Stephen Sondheim.
Oh!
I literally wrote a 20-page paper on it in college. I love it so much. That's not
Amazing.
A joke.
Amazing. Perfect.
But so the funny story with that is that the whole time that I was doing all this theater and singing a bunch and stuff like that, my parents were still really strictly like, you're not allowed to be in the industry. Like, it is a horrible industry. You know, they're not in it, but we, you know, having grown up in L.A., you kind of know what it is.
What brought your family to L.A.?
My dad worked in politics, and so that was why I was born in D.C. And then he just switched jobs after, you know, the political stuff was over and, you know, got work out in L.A. And it was between SF and L.A., which I just found out really recently, but they liked the vibe in L.A. more, which is crazy for me because I feel like my life would be so different had I grown up in
right.
SF.
Yeah.
Because so much of it was just being in a city where, like, theater and music and all that stuff is so present.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole time my parents were like, you know, no industry. And people were, like, you know, in the classic L.A. fashion, like, oh, these Asians were like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And the only thing they let me do were voiceovers. So I started doing voiceovers when I was super, super young because I really liked it. You didn't have to miss school, and it had nothing to do with image. And that was my parents', like, number one things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in sixth grade, they let me go on one audition, and it was only because it involved singing, and I loved singing. Mm-hmm. And it was for Disney had this cover band of Devo from the 80s called Devo 2.0.
What?
And I auditioned to be in it, and I made it. I was like, and it was an all-male thing, you know, like, whip it good. Yeah, so I was like their Kidz Bop cover group. And we were competing with High School Musical. It was like all this stuff because we're all part of Disney.
Oh, my God.
And they sent us on tour around the country. I had a mini rock star experience.
Whoa.
But the whole time my parents kept being like, Jackie, this is not going to last. Everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Like, enjoy it while you're on it. But this is just – and that was kind of my first experience with mm-hmm. like, you know, like the sort of fame, not really.
Right.
But that was a really valuable lesson for me.
Because you were also super young.
I was super young. And it was like a year. And my parents, I was not allowed to miss any school. Like I had to keep, I had to keep, you know, keep up my studies. And that was always my number one priority. So my parents were like, that's like kind of the, you know, the lengths of that. But they would let me do professional theater. And so I got cast in Sunday in the Park with George with Kelly O'Hara as Dot. And I played Louise, the only kid.
And this was
in like seventh grade or eighth grade. And it became my favorite musical of all time. Mm-hmm. Like I was just for like my entrance into it and getting to be on stage with such incredible performers. But then also it was such a beautiful, it's such an amazing show. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started. I will geek out over it so hard. And then you guys are going to be like, nobody cares. But I do.
You care.
It's so good.
You care.
Someone listening to this is like, hell yeah.
Yes, like, I have also watched the entire version with Mandy Patinkin and Bernadette Peters on YouTube. No,
amazing.
But anyway, so I did that. And then I started, and I did like professional operas at LA Opera and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
But still, it was like school's my number one priority. Right. And then my singing stuff started to get a little more professional. Like I was performing in more professional venues and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I sang at the Ford Amphitheater and the Hollywood Bowl and like a big, you know, it was just like all this stuff was kind of unfolding. But once again, it was like school.
Yeah.
No industry. And then, and so I didn't know, like I always knew I loved performing and I loved singing and I loved acting. I was in a really intense theater program at my school, like very intense.
Mm-hmm.
But I never thought that it was something that I'd even be allowed to pursue.
Right.
I didn't know how one pursued it, like all this stuff. And as we know, I'm a huge nerd fangirl. And so I read The Hunger Games as, like, the all-school book because everybody had to read it. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm obsessed. And then I read the whole series in one night, and then I spent hours looking up, like, potential casts on YouTube, you know.
Crazy.
Let's also reestablish the fact that I was the nerdy theater kid in high school that was, you know, way too obsessed with everything geeky and, you know, it's just like all of the above. Like, I was trying to figure out how to save up enough money to go to LeakyCon. Like, that was what I was doing and, like, do those Harry Potter tours of Scotland and stuff like that. And this is my junior year of high school, so it was really just, like, college application focused and stuff like that. And I thought I was going to do, like, physics. Like, I don't know. And huge fan of the book series. And then I did an interview for the director because he was interviewing kids that were fans of the books.
Whoa.
And so that was his pitch to be director, was I'm coming at this from the fans' perspective.
Whoa.
And I was good friends with his daughter. And so she was like, yeah, come in and do an interview. And I thought it was going to be like a little interview thing, like where it's like, what do you think? Blah, blah, blah. And I walked in and it was like lights and camera and all of this stuff. And I was like, okay. And I sat in this, like, little thing, and the director's behind the camera. And he started to ask me all these questions about the book and the book series and all of that. And then afterwards, he kept being like, you were so natural on camera. You were so natural on camera. Do you do this? Do you act? And I was like, yeah, I'm in a really intense theater program. Like, cool. You know, thanks. Didn't think anything of it. And then he got the job as director. And then a few months after that, he called me up, and he was like, hey, would you come in and audition for this role? I really see you as it, because he was like, you're clearly really smart. And I was super into school at the time, and I'm pretty sure I played competitive Scrabble and stuff like that. And so it was like, you know, would you come in and audition? And like the first thing that blurted out of my mouth was, I was like, but I don't have red hair. Because I was like, what? And he was like, that can be arranged.
Oh my God.
And so it was really one of those stars align, this doesn't happen. I mean, and even so, it was like I was on set and people were going out and like hanging out or going to bars, and I was like in my trailer doing SAT prep, you know? And so it was this really surreal, it was like going to this insane summer camp.
Right.
You know, the summer before my senior year.
Yeah.
And it just totally and completely changed my entire life. And so that was a really – but I remember also I would go to set
– so how old were you? You were
– 16.
Oh, wow.
I think I turned 17 on set.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go – yeah, I did. I was 17.
That was so funny because I was in Billy Ellie when I was 17.
Oh,
it was
my
at
God.
The same
Billy was, literally Billy was your Hunger age. Games.
Yeah.
That's so
– same.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yep. I was like, I'm hearing you. I'm like, yeah, it's such a crazy.
Yeah, the thing that like just totally like whirlwinds you out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Definitely. And it was, I just remember going to set every single day that I could.
What did your parents think about it?
Well, they were really scared. They didn't want me to do it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because they spent a really long time thinking about it and talking about it.
Right.
And finally, they kind of set me down and they were like, look, we have decided that we think you are mature enough to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, everything has. So like when my parents worked in politics, it's a lot of highs and lows. And they were involved in a lot of different political campaigns and stuff like that. Like when my dad was working, my dad worked like in the Clinton administration, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was there for the first, you know, he helped run the campaign, and then he was there for like the first year or so of the, you know, of all of that. And before he came out to LA. And it's like when you're there and when you're in it, you're in the newspaper all the time. People are talking about you all the time. And then you leave and nobody, like you're done, you know? Yeah. Or like my mom, which I hadn't even found out about till I was there. So she works with Human Rights Watch now. But at the time, like when she was my age, she was a theater major at UCLA.
Wow.
And she was in, she won all of these drama awards. She was in Welcome Back, Kotter, the John Travolta show. Decided she hated the industry and then went and studied like law in France, like international law. Just, you know, insanely smart. She's totally a Ravenclaw. But but so she also knew about the whole like kind of the waves of it all.
Right.
And
well, those are two intense, like
intense
jobs.
Yeah. Really intense jobs. And so they kind of sat me down and they were like, look, we don't know where this is gonna take you. We don't know what this roller coaster is about to be. But remember at the end, of the, you know, just like what school is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. No matter what happens, you're going to college. Mm-hmm. And that is your number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was basically just like we've decided that you're mature enough to handle this. But you also have to have – and we're going to make sure that we, like, keep you in check the whole time.
Right.
And I'm so, you know, grateful to have had that. I'm also really grateful that they – you know, like deem me able to kind of like.
How were you feeling? Best of were both you excited worlds. About it, or were you kind of nervous?
Well, so it was weird. It wasn't real till I got to set,
right?
Because, you know, they actually kind of said there were a lot of ifs. There were a lot of things in the air. It was like the call that I got wasn't "you got the role. You're going to set in 3 months." It was. There's going to be a big fight for you to have the role, but the director really wants you. But it was kind of like, we're fighting for you. You have to go into training. You also have to lose a bunch of weight, which as a 16-year-old kid was really damaging for me, which is actually how I kind of started doing all my body image panels and, you know, got super tracked down that.
Did you have to lose weight to have lost that weight for the whole thing? Or did you have to, like, lose weight so that, like, over the movie, you lose weight?
No, it was like, because, you know, you start filming. Filming is so out of order. It was like, it was basically like, you have to lose, like, 15 pounds. And if you don't, you're not going to be in it. It was just like, it was a weird, it was, you know.
Yeah.
And so I started to go into training. I started to lose a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
My friends, I couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
My friends at school were freaking out because I was missing school a lot. And I was just, like, dropping weight, like, you know. And because I did it, you know, nowadays, it's a very different story. I would be like, no.
Right. Definitely.
Unless it like really served.
Yeah.
Unless it was like very necessary for it. But I still, it's like, we can go into that later. But I, you know, they were all freaking out. And then it wasn't until the day that they publicly announced it, which was like 2 months after I'd gotten this initial call.
Right.
That I even felt remotely safe.
Uh-huh.
And then it was when we got to set that we signed the contract. And so it was that really so, this, like...
I had such a similar experience to you.
With that Billy?
Are
you serious?
Yeah, they told me that I didn't have the role because I lied to them. I said I was 12 and I wasn't. And
I
then,
didn't know they almost didn't give it
to me. They were like, well, the casting director freaked out. And she's like, oh, well, then she can't get the role. She get like, we're going to have to talk to the... But then the choreographer who was basically in charge of us was like, I don't care if she's like 30, she's perfect for the role, give her the part, and then hung up the phone. And then, but if he would have been like, oh, okay, we'll get, but he's the one that stuck up
oh
for me.
Oh my God, that's so,
so it's
crazy.
Like, it's
such a similar situation.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
such a similar experience, but it's so scary when you like, you think that you have something and then it's like,
but you, don't,
you
know.
Don't know, so you
it's
can't
just, like,
celebrate.
I couldn't get excited.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And so it was, what
God.
Was really cool, though, I'll never forget this.
Feeling.
It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
But I will never forget. The day that they announced uh-huh. it, because the thing was because it was the all-school read,
uh-huh.
the whole year was filled with events around the Hunger Games.
Oh, how cool.
And so, like, even a week before, they'd done, like, a school-wide Hunger Games event, and everybody, like, all the teachers did a parade from the different districts, as, like,
oh
though they were different
gosh.
Districts, and everybody from
best.
District 5 wore a fox mask for fox face, because that was the only thing you knew about
yeah.
the district.
Yeah.
And so everybody was following the castings really closely, and it got announced, and it was just like people were running around the school screaming, like yelling down from the
How
balconies.
How big was your school?
It was seventh grade through 12th grade, and every grade had 80 people. So
okay,
it was only
yeah.
like, you know.
Yeah, that's still so much bigger than my school. That's a lot
oh, really?
Of people to be
yeah.
like freaking out over you.
And yeah. it was, and somebody, one of the teachers sent an email out to all the teachers. And so all the teachers knew.
Oh
and
my
like,
gosh.
People were like a plot. It was like,
ah!
I was literally walking. Somebody would yell from the balcony like, Jackie's gonna be in a movie. You know, like it was, it was like everybody
best.
Was, it was this crazy celebration. And that was a really exciting feeling because
yeah.
it was just like, this is so fucking cool,
well,
you know?
It, you also finally got to celebrate it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. it was this thing where it was like, oh, this is real and this is happening and this
right.
is insane. And
right.
like, what on earth? And then literally it was like, that came out. A week later, I went for rehearsals. I came back. I took 4 AP exams. I left for the shoot for the whole summer. Like,
yeah.
it was just such a weird
mm-hmm. Yeah.
whirlwind of an experience.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I came back and it was like dealing with all the press and the press tour and missing school while I was doing my college applications. And then I got into Stanford, which was honestly a relief because I could, you know, relax a little bit second semester.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was dealing with all of that like while the movie was coming out. And then, you know, it was just an insane,
yeah.
you know, whirlwind of an experience. But that was also when I started to realize kind of doing the press tour and talking to people and going to LeakyCon and all of that. The effect that having this strong female heroine had on young women specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And also I started to realize the impact image-wise that the media has on people. And I started to – I remember right after the movie came out, Amanda calling me like sobbing because she was getting death threats because people were like, I didn't want Rue to be black.
No.
And I, you know, it was like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then also seeing the way that people reacted to the body stuff. There's a lot of body stuff around Jen and
mm-hmm.
around like.
That's right.
You know, yeah. I don't know if it, people being like, oh, she's too big for Katniss and like all this stuff, which is like
yeah.
so messed up.
Yeah.
And I just kind of started to realize the impact it also had on me and
mm-hmm.
how much like I started to have sort of disordered eating coming out of that because the issue wasn't. I mean, yeah, it was an issue being told to lose all that weight when I was that young.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also like I was playing a starving child, you know?
Yeah.
And the issue was coming out of that and people being like, oh, if you want to make it in this industry, this is
this
the way
is
you,
what
have
you have
to
do.
Stay.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like, wait, but I was just – I was supposed to – I didn't get my period for a year and a half because I was so skinny, you know?
Yeah.
And that was when I started to do body image panels and stuff like that. And I also kind of realized – I hated all the roles that were out there that I was seeing.
Yeah.
And I went to school. And when I went to school, I kind of said to my agents, I was like, look, I had the opportunity for the first thing that I was a part of to be so massively culturally impactful
mm-hmm.
and to have such a positive message.
Yeah.
I want to create my own media because I want to make sure that everything I'm a part of, also because I started to gain weight and I was like, well, I still want to do this.
Yeah.
I don't want to let, you know, I don't
right.
want to be so subjected to the
yeah.
the whims of, you know, the industry and casting directors and,
well,
you
I
know.
Think that's finally starting to change. I think
finally.
A lot of women are finally talking about it and
which
being
is
like,
great.
Yeah, like, listen, don't, like, accept these roles. Like,
yeah.
don't, like, speak up about it.
And,
you know?
And make, you know, and people are starting to be respected, you know, female filmmakers and female storytellers
mm-hmm.
and, you know, from all backgrounds and,
yeah.
And all of this stuff, which is amazing. But that was kind of how I started to develop start developing films and get into production because I was like, I want to have a creative voice in everything I'm a part of because I want to make sure that what I'm a part of has something to say.
Yeah.
That is important and that I think people could, you know, that I don't know, that I think is important.
Well, no, it comes from like a place, like a personal place of something. Honestly, the best art comes from a person that you know what you want to say and you want to say it and you like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Because
with the message,
you are clear.
It's like that line in A Star Is Born.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that is. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah.
For reference, Bradley Cooper says something like, what is it?
I don't know. He says something like that to Lady Gaga, though.
Like, everybody, like, a lot of people have the ability to say something, but the question is, like, what you're saying.
Yeah,
and how
exactly.
You say it or something like that.
Yeah, but that's definitely it, though. The people that make it as storytellers and as, like, intense artists in this industry are those who have something to say. And I think you have something to say. And I think you have something to stand for. And you're like, listen, this is enough's enough. And I want to change this.
Thanks,
and you
Tessa.
Are the Gryffindor that will change it.
Yeah.
but honestly, you need those people, though. You need those trailblazers or else, like, it's just going to stay the same.
Yeah. And thank God there's so many emerging right now. And
yeah.
People
in
are
politics, too.
To listen.
I mean, it's like the same type of thing, you know? It's like, but yeah. I mean, you saw that there's like a parallel between those two.
Everybody
industries.
Go vote!
Sorry. It's so true. but it's like, you can be that person, and we believe in you.
Yay!
And you can be that person. Yeah, totally.
Sorry, that was like a super long-winded answer to how I got started. But I mean, like,
wonderful.
Long story short,
no.
You know, my basis is theater and I'm a performer at my core.
No, this is what we want, like, to hear from people.
Yeah.
We want to hear their stories. We want to hear, like, you know, where they came from and so that they can help people listening. And you know.
I do have another, like, little mini anecdote. Just
go
like
for
self-journey
it.
Or whatever. Which was that... when I first got to school and all this stuff was kind of coming up and I was sort of figuring out who I was and my voice and all of that. By the way, like, people did not want me to go to school.
Yeah.
And my managers did not want me to go to school.
Yeah.
Ex-managers. Ha! but there was a lot of negative feedback to that. I mean, which makes sense because for all intents and purposes,
right.
I was, you know, in industry terms, very hot and then completely took myself out of the game.
Right.
Yeah.
But for me, that was really necessary
yeah.
because I also... I had a lot of imposter syndrome, which I also think is a little bit of a female thing. Like, I think that that's something that's a commonality
yeah.
in people that I've spoken to. But I got plucked out of oblivion. I had this, like, random fame from nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt like I didn't deserve it. I was like, all I did was run across the screen and then die and eat berries. Like, that was it. Why do I have 90,000 followers on Twitter, you know?
mm-hmm.
And I think that... what ended up happening is that I started to get like, okay, how can I, you know, fit myself in? And like, how can I keep this going? And but I wasn't ready for that. And I wasn't ready in that
yeah.
sense. And so I started to come at things from the business angle, which was really important. And that was when I was running like, you know, She's So Boss, which was this, you know, and Let's Get Real, these different like female empowerment type things that I was doing. But I still didn't believe in myself as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And as like a storyteller. And I did, you know, the Shakespeare troupe at school and improv. And I was in all the musicals and stuff like that when I was at college.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept being like, I'm only getting these roles because, you know,
yeah.
I ran across the screen. You know, well, that was
what
nobody...
changed that?
Well, so my junior year of college, I had like a big, I kind of hit mental rock bottom.
Yeah.
I was really unhappy. I was going through a lot of personal changes at the time. I was going through a breakup. I was going through, like, friend issues.
Mm-hmm.
I had spent a few months where I'd been abroad, and then I was traveling a lot with production stuff, but
yeah.
I wasn't really focused on art stuff.
Yeah.
And I was kind of lacking that in my life. And I was in a show where I felt like I wasn't doing a good job, and I wasn't getting – I was in 12 Angry Men. I was playing Juror Number 3. And I also felt like stuff was going nowhere for me in the industry. Like all my production, you know, production is a world of fast and slow and things had kind of gotten a little bit slow. And because I didn't believe in my artistry, I didn't have any feet to stand on in terms of that. And so
yeah.
I kind of was just like, I don't, you know, I felt like my wheels were spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And Stanford is a very, I think creativity is about the process.
Mm-hmm.
And Stanford is a school of results.
Yeah.
And so... I felt like I was not I started to get wrapped up in the results of things.
Right.
And, you know, being around so many tech people, and I started to be like, do I need a startup? Do I need to go into tech? What am I doing going into the industry? Why do I deserve to call myself an artist? There are people that are so much more talented than me, like all this stuff. And the other feedback that I was getting from these, like, kind of friends and exes and all this stuff was people being like, you're too sensitive. You're too vulnerable. You're too honest. You wear your heart on your sleeve. Like, like all these things is really negative qualities.
Yeah. Were they artists?
No.
Yeah, non-artists.
None of them were artists. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was getting that more and more, and I was starting to believe that these
were
kind of...
That's so surprising to me, because I feel like so many artists wear their
That's my point, is they weren't artists,
like,
so
I feel like at Stanford, you don't... Like, there were some artists, and we bonded together, but it really wasn't that supported by the school.
It was more of a Stanford thing, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
These are a lot of... Because they weren't artists, so they're like, you're being too vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly.
Like... To be an artist is to be really vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I was feeling more and more like that. I felt like I wasn't doing well on this show. Like, it was just like getting worse and worse. And I just started to be like, who am I? What am I doing with my life? Why do I deserve to pursue this? Like, I don't. And there's so many things I can't do that people are so much better than me at. Like, you know, it was just, I was in this kind of really bad negative self-talk. Mm-hmm. The only way I can describe it is that I was eating myself from the inside. That was how I felt.
I feel like you were just so scattered. I feel like
so
parts
scattered.
Of yourself were everywhere and you didn't know. Like,
and I was just going in and in and in. And I was crying all the time. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment where I was literally curled up on my bed sobbing. And I had this thought of like, this is why I don't drink and this is why I don't do drugs, is because I want to and I need to be feeling all of this because this is the only way that I can process it. Mm. That was just like a side note. But anyway, so I go up in this show the first night and I feel like – and it's like 2-week rehearsal process. We're putting it on its feet. I have by far the most dialogue in the show. Nobody leaves the stage. It's like all contingent on you hitting your dialogue. And it's like I'm playing – we're playing these like very male characters as women and I'm playing the hardest one to turn into a female. Mm-hmm. The one that's like talking about beating his son to make him more of a man and like super like, you know, kind of like Donald Trump as a juror, if you can imagine that.
Right.
And no guidance from the director. And so anyway, we go up the first night and I feel okay about my performance, but not great.
Mm-hmm.
Review comes out the next morning and like eviscerates me. Ugh. Just eviscerates me. And I spend the whole day sobbing in bed, right? And then I have to go up and get on stage the next night. And this is the night that all of my theater friends are coming who are very judgmental and who I want to impress. Oh. I do an even worse job. And I can see it in their eyes, you know. And the next day, it's like I'm literally – it's the last performance. And I'm like, I don't want to go out on stage. I can't do this. I don't want to act anymore. Like, I'm done. I'm done being an artist. I'm not in this. But I have to go on stage one more time. And right before I went on, I saw my Papa Jim out in the audience. And I was like, okay, this is – I'm just going to have so much fun. Like, f*** it. Mm-hmm. You know? Excuse language. Screw it. And I went out on stage and, like, threw everything else out the window. And it was, like, the best performance I've ever – it was just, like, I felt like I tapped into something else. And it was, like – I had so much fun and it was so different. And then the next morning I was talking to my friend about the whole experience and I was kind of talking about what I'd been going through. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, and I look at your boyfriend, because her boyfriend's unbelievably talented. I was like, and I look at him and I'm like, what right do I have to pursue being an artist? Mm-hmm. And she was like, Jackie, he's talented. He's a good singer, but he's not the best singer. Mm-hmm. The thing about him that is so – the reason you can't stop watching him when he's on stage
– so true.
– is because of his honesty.
Yeah.
And she was like, that's just who you are. And all of a sudden, I started walking and I was thinking and I was like, maybe it's not about talent. It's about how honest you are and then how much you can tap into that universal thing that runs through all of us. And then maybe this thing that everybody has saying, you know, has been saying is like the worst thing about me, or that I've been thinking of as my greatest weakness, that is so innate to me that I can't help myself, mm-hmm. is the reason I am an artist. Mm-hmm. Is like the thing that makes me the most me.
Totally.
Which is the thing that taps me into the thing that's the most universal. Mm-hmm. And I just started laughing, like, and crying, and it was like this emotional release where I was like, oh my God, maybe I love myself. You know, it was one of those moments where it's like, and so. I felt like I carried that like a talisman through the rest of the year because it was like 2 weeks till the end of the year.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, I was alone in Berlin for like a week and I'd written this song about – the industry and feeling manipulated by it and all this stuff. And I'd always seen it super visual. I saw it like Georges Méliès meets like cardboard scene in Singing in the Rain, you know, meets like children's vaudeville theater.
Yeah, totally.
And I just kind of like had this idea in my head. And I went to my friend and I was like, hey, could I borrow your camera? I want to shoot a mock-up in my house. I was actually inspired by like you and my other YouTuber friends that were shooting these videos, you know. And I was like, why don't I just shoot a mock-up to this? And he was like, I have a theater for you. And he takes me to the theater. Cool. And they were like, we'll let you rent it out for $500 total for 3 days.
Oh, nice.
Starting tomorrow.
Whoa.
And I was like, that's too much money. And I ran out.
You ran?
I ran out. And my friend was like, Jackie, you're not scared of the money. You're scared of the art.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I was like, oh, my God, you're right. I'm a Gryffindor. I have to say yes to this. So I went back in. I signed the paper. I literally left. I went dumpster diving for cardboard. I went and I spent like another $100 on – I was like – he was like, you've made the money on your art. Put the money into your art.
Mm-hmm, totally.
And so I bought a bunch of construction equipment. I literally pulled an all-nighter like storyboarding the entire video, building every set piece, every prop, every costume. I went in the next morning. I shot from like 9 to 6 on a tripod playing every character, hanging up every set piece, like everything. Came home, pulled another all-nighter like – making all this stuff for the next day, one more all night of doing it. Like, and by the end of it, all the people that like worked in the theater were like, you got this, you got this. And they were like rooting me on from the sidelines because I was like so close to being done. And I finished, I was like an hour over and I just collapsed. And it was like all these things I thought I could never do.
Yeah.
And I'd never been more proud of myself in my entire life. And that was like a talisman inside me. And then that year at Stanford, my final year, it was like all of a sudden it was like, okay, I've developed out the business side of things. I've got these films in production. Now it's time for me to challenge myself as an artist and like try to tap into that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kept saying yes to anything that scared me. And so like I entered into a writing competition. I took roles that I was scared of. I directed, you know, musically directed a musical improv for my troupe. I entered into a musical theater writing competition at the last second. I came in first place. Like that became a huge narrative. And now I'm writing musicals. Like it was just like all this stuff that I thought I could never do. I took roles I never thought I could do. I, you know, performed in venues I never thought I could perform in. And I could do it all as long as I just like stepped off the cliff, you know? And to me, that was so important in graduating because I'm now a year out of college and kind of stepping into the industry and actually believing in myself as an artist, like above and beyond anything else. And then being like, okay, great. I also have the business mind where I can create the opportunities for myself to do art and say what I want to say. But I really believe that I can do it all. You know, it's like whatever I'm channeling that energy into. And having that belief and that trust in myself has been so vital. And so I always say that like I'm very grateful to Stanford and to college, not necessarily because of what it gave me, but because of what it didn't give me and then forced me to find in myself.
Ooh.
And so that's kind of – that was that like artistic journey.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy to think about.
Yeah, the way it like pushed you.
Yeah. Having graduated and having, you know, now spent a year in LA, like everyone always says the year after graduation is one of the hardest years of life. And it was actually like one of the happiest years of my life because I was like, oh, this is what I'm meant to be doing on so many levels. Yeah. And I felt like, you know, I've kind of being met by the universe in that sense, like just like the way things are unrolling and unraveling and stuff like that. Unfolding. There we go. But by that same token, as I think I was a little bit maybe mildly depressed kind of the whole time I was at Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't feel like I was myself. But I feel like that was so important in me finding myself and me realizing definitely. Like, oh, yeah, this isn't me.
Well, you this need to is, have lows you know? In order to learn from them.
Like, totally.
You know, people are so scared of getting to that place, but especially artists and actors, like you need to
you
get
need
to that
those.
Place.
Yeah, and I also think that after getting all that weird fame and like that weird high from kind of nothing, it was really important for me to find the substance and really take myself out of, you know, social media and all of that stuff and, you know, like realize who I am and my value outside of that and like what it is that I need to say outside of that and how I can say it as a storyteller and as an artist.
Yeah.
And so
you get broken down so that you can put yourself back together in an intentional way and like
yeah
figure out what you want to be.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
definitely. I thought it was interesting how you said that, like, the most talented performer isn't always the best. And my favorite performers are never the best. They're never the most talented.
It's the people that are the most honest.
Honest, like, my favorite performer is Lin-Manuel, and he is not a good singer.
He's not, like, actually a really great example.
Right? Yeah. You know what I mean? He's not the best singer. And people always complain about that. And they're like, why is he playing Hamilton? Like, he's not as good as, like, his backup. I'm like, that's not the point. The point is what he brings to the role and how he speaks to it and what he's saying, like, on the stage. Like,
totally. And he's one of my biggest idols in terms of, like, because I really do want to be able to do it all. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe I can. And I'm really occupying all those spaces in the different projects I'm working on right now. And people tell me no all the time.
Really?
Like, all the time. Ugh. I get comments that are like, yeah, well, you have to choose one, or you have to, you know, whatever. And I think a lot from the older generation, because, you know, that's more of what it used to be.
That
you
makes
know?
Sense.
And it is different now. But he is someone I so look up to as a person who has been able to, you know, really stake his claim in all of these different areas and, like, and do them all and not listen to.
I really think that is, like, an old way of thinking, though, because honestly, like,
I mean, it's all, what you guys do.
All the entertainment nowadays, it's moving more and more towards people just, like, creating their own thing or sort of having to do multiple things or work multiple jobs or it's. Yeah. I think that's kind of. People that have the passion are the ones that are doing these kinds of things. That's kind of what is running. Like, if they want to create something, they're the ones that are putting it into it. It's not like, oh, I have to just be an actor. Oh, I just have to, like, do this one thing. It's like, no, I want to, like, make all this happen.
If I want to do everything that I want to do, then I have to be that one. Yeah. And so I'm not going to listen to anybody telling me that I can't, because I'm like, well, it doesn't matter because I'm going to do it anyways.
If you just want to do one thing, like, you just want to be an actor, and you don't want to do anything else even surrounding it, then you're depending on a lot of other people to make it
which
possible.
Is fine, but it's just like that can just for not some people, be that's your personality.
Yeah.
You know? And that's.
But if you're willing to, like, put something together yourself, then you can, like, make a situation in which you can be acting and make things happen
you can
without
be, like,
waiting on people.
Acting and then also a voice, like a creative voice behind the camera and then also involved in the distribution and making sure that, like, you know, it has a social impact aspect to it. And,
oh, definitely.
You know, that everything that you're saying, you know, is something you want to be saying.
That's why I think the internet's so beautiful, is because you can do that. Is because it gives you that opportunity to sort of have a platform to create things. Like, another example would be, like, kind of what Shane Dawson is doing right now on YouTube. Mm-hmm. He's doing this whole, like, documentary series, and he's doing it all himself.
That's amazing.
You know what I mean? But it's something that would normally be on Netflix, but he's like, you know what? I'm not going to wait for Netflix to come to me. I'm just going to do it. You know? So that's, and everyone is watching. Like, he gets more views than Netflix. You know what I mean? He's getting, like, 10 million at least views per each one. It's one of those things where. But he's doing that. It's like, those are the, that's what I said before. Those are the trailblazers. Those are the people that are going to, like, that other people are going to follow.
Well, I think that that's what that video did for me. Mm-hmm. Was it was that, especially because, like, right after Hunger Games, I was really pushed to, like, release a couple of songs that were not me. They were not my voice. Very literally. It was so produced that I did not want to release.
Very disenchanted.
And I was, which isn't me at all. And I was forced to. And I did not want to. And I felt like I had no voice. And so going to school and, you know, all of that stuff, and then doing this video, it was like, oh, I literally did all of this myself, and I did it in 3 days. Mm-hmm. Like, what could I do if I had a week?
Yeah. You know?
And it was
you
also like,
anything.
This is so, because the world doesn't know what's it. But it's also like, oh, I could do everything myself. And also something that I'm learning too is it is important to, you know, push up responsibility sometimes and, you know, include people.
And also to take time for yourself.
And to take time for yourself,
Jackie.
Which is important.
Yeah.
Sleep until 11 sometimes.
I work very hard. I push myself. But I think that that's also like, it's just that was a cool realization for me. And it's like, no matter what, whenever I feel doubtful, whenever I feel bad about myself, or whenever I'm like, what am I doing? Can I do this? This hill looks so big. I go back and I watch that video. And I'm like,
that's so sweet.
And it just kind of like lights a little fire in me of like, worst case scenario, I could just block off tomorrow and go lock myself in a weird room and make a strange cardboard video.
This is what we do all the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and like,
this is our lives.
This is what I do. Yeah. And it was like, oh God, my favorite author is Anthony Doerr, who wrote All the Light We Cannot See. Beautiful book, won a Pulitzer. He spoke at Stanford, and he actually spoke to this like 15-person class that I was in, this writing, you know, art seminar class. And he said something that stuck with me so much, where he was like, if you are a furniture maker, and if that is your passion, and if that is what you want to do, you should just be making a chair for fun.
So true.
And he
so
was like, true. If you want to write, put your pen on the paper, but as a method of play.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I was like, oh my God, that was what that was for me, is it wasn't results. And this goes back to the results versus process. And so, you know, with all this stuff, it is easy for me to get locked up in the results, because that's what producing is and all that stuff. But that's why it's so important for me to do. Like, I do a lot of musical improv. I do a lot of, like, random shows.
We need
shows
that creative release.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, writing. And for all the projects that I'm developing, other people's work that I'm going to be eventually performing in, but right now it's other people's work, I'm also developing my own work. And that, like, for me is the stuff of play, you know, where it's not results-oriented. It's just, like, how can I create in this moment? How can I have these outlets? How can I do this just for fun? You know, even if there's no, like, there's no result to me going up on stage and doing, like, an hour-long, like, weird-ass improv show where I'm, like, playing piano and doing, you know, a show about a weird smorgasbord the helicopter thing, you know? Like, there's, but it taps you into that honesty and that art and that, like, channel. I think.
Yeah,
definitely.
So since that show that kind of changed everything that you put together and filmed, what have you been working on and that has been capturing your attention that you've been excited about?
Oh, man. Well, what's really cool is that I started to kind of work in these different realms. And now at this point, and this is what I mean of, like, I feel like the universe has kind of risen to meet me or whatever. I now have 7 different films and projects in development. And it's everything ranging from, like, an animated series based off of a musical that I was commissioned to write about this, like, you know, about all of these badass princesses. You know, the musical was about this, like, Asian gender nonconforming princess. It's like girls for princesses for us to look up to, called the Guardian Princess Alliance. And we're developing that out as a whole animated series thing now. Or like, I got cast in this live action Alice in Wonderland that is all female directing, all female production team, all this stuff. And then I bonded with the director, and she had me come on as her, like, creative assistant. So I started working with her on that. And then I started to get involved in production calls. I came on as a full producer. And then I, you know, my character is going to get to sing in it. So I got to write the song for my character and write another couple songs for it. And so it's just like, that's getting to use all different parts of my mind. Stars a woman, you know, it's all of that. Or like, I got a musical that I entered, you know, into this musical theater writing competition with, is now being developed as a feature film, and I'm working as, like, a writer on that, which is really cool. And then, and they're all in, like, various stages. I got backed by this production deal and closing an option deal on this book about one of the only professional female baseball players and, like, her journey. And I'm a huge baseball nerd, and, like, or a book that's like Handmaid's Tale meets Mean Girls that I'm helping to kind of get made with this, like, amazing production company called Killer Films Level Forward that's doing, like, they did Jagged Little Pill, the Alanis Morissette musical that's going to Broadway and stuff like that. And so it's just all of these, you know, and that's only to name a few, you know, like, there's more than that. And it's what's cool is that, A, they're all in very different stages of development. Like, you know, one of them starts filming in, you know, April of next year. One of them is probably filming, like, end of next year. The other ones are, like, way longer in the process. But they're all in, like, very different stages. I'm still writing songs for, like, the musicals. And so that's keeping me really creatively engaged. And I'm potentially going to start on a new musical soon. And then, like, working as a writer on the projects and then performing in musical improv. And then, like, still auditioning and, you know, going out for stuff like that, which is also, like, you know, I get my acting, doing theater, doing, like, little shows with friends and stuff. I was in my friend's short this summer. And so it's really getting to stretch, doing, like, acting classes and singing classes and performing at open mics. And, you know, it's I feel like it's getting to really stretch, like, all sides of me. I feel like mentally I'm really stretched because I'm getting to kind of be on this side of things. And I just, more than anything, though, I just feel very blessed by, and this is kind of harkening back to what we were talking about earlier, the amount of people in this industry that are mentoring me and supporting me and passing me around, because I am standing on 8 million people's shoulders right now. Mm-hmm. And like the amount of people, like the fact that this director looked at a 23-year-old, I guess now I'm 24, but I was 23 at the time, 23-year-old girl that she cast in this film and was like, I'm going to value your creative opinions.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like who, that's.
No, but she sees something in you.
Yeah. And I'm so lucky to have all of these, you know, most recently, like this woman named Ellen Vane is the CEO of Gotham Group, which is this big production management company. Like she just signed me, is working with me on all of my projects and, you know, is like mentoring me in so many ways. And is this like powerful powerhouse of a woman. And, you know, to have her be like, I see something in you, in all of you, in not just like you as an actor, you as this or you as that, but like I see you as like for all the stuff that you're doing and your voice and and she even said to me like once, she was like, what's so cool is that all your projects range in terms of where they are and where they're based and their size and their mediums, but they all fall under the same umbrella. And that was like just like to have someone see me like that, you know, and it's and so I just feel so like I also understand that.
No, because like, you take the projects that you believe in and you know, they're valuable to you.
Right. Like stuff I'm passionate
about.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's like, and once again, like just to caveat all of this with the fact that I know that I'm in such a position of extreme privilege that I can even do that, you know, and that comes from having grown up in LA, having such a safety net. Having had such a great entrance, like a foot in the door into the industry that kind of allowed all this stuff to kind of fall into place in different ways. And so there's so much, like I was talking to my friend about, you know, cause I'm not great with social media. And so I've been on a really big break from it recently cause I find that it really messes up my creative flow when I'm on it. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking about how I'm in such a privileged position that I can even be like, oh, I don't need to be on social media. Like, I can, like, cut myself off from that for right now. Because so many people do need that. And that's, like, you know, their way to, you know, that's an industry in and of itself, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's so important. And so, like, I want to acknowledge that with all of this, that, like, I really try every day to kind of appreciate how lucky I am. And because of that, too, I think that also is, like, I want to make sure that the stories I'm telling are stories worth telling or that are going to give back in some way.
Yeah.
Like Killer Level Forward, all of their projects, it's like 15% of the proceeds go to the nonprofit that they partner with on the project. And it's like, I want to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where you're really making, you know, because I've been given such an incredible platform and such incredible opportunities. I feel like I'm like almost throwing a middle finger up to the universe if I don't use it.
Yeah.
To, you know, give back.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Ugh. So great. Jackie's the best. Okay. Okay, so this podcast is called Fantastic Geeks. So what is one of your favorite things in the entire world to geek out about? Like this, we are all fans of something. So like, what are you a fan of?
Harry Potter. You guys.
Yeah!
No, it's so much. And it's also like, people come up to me all the time. I was talking to my friend about this, where it's like, I think that when people get like any degree of well-known, people are like, it's like you know, if they're super nerdy about something, all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's so cute, like, and I'm like, no. People always think that when they meet me, they're like,
yeah,
oh my god, she's so like cute and nerdy, and then they get to know me and they're like, oh, this is like on a different level. And that's you know, that's how I am. So I would say probably my two biggest like things, besides just being in like a book nerd overall, Harry Potter and then Disney. For reference, like basically all I listen to in my car is Disney radio. Like it's just really sad. And musical theater too. But Harry Potter, I just finished my annual reread of the series. And my grandpa passed away a few weeks ago and I was reading book 7 kind of as I was going through that. And I think this is like my 16th or 17th time reading it. And I've never taken as much from it as I read, like, as I did, like, reading it during that time period.
Yeah,
and it's just, I think that my level of everything for the series just goes so beyond deep. Mm-hmm. I mean, look who I'm talking to. I know you guys like understand, yeah. But
oh,
it's just
we get it.
It means so much to me in so many ways.
Yes.
That's wonderfully convenient that you love Harry Potter. So I assume you're a little familiar with the Hogwarts houses.
Oh, am I?
So would you be willing to do some sorting with us of some Hunger Games characters?
Oh, fun. Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes.
So we can't spend too long deliberating. We've got to, like, commit.
This is rapid fire. We're not doing the song. We're just going.
So, first of all, Foxface.
Tell us.
Ravenclaw.
Ravenclaw! Yes,
100p.
Totally.
Yeah, because that's her downfall.
Yeah.
That's every Ravenclaw's downfall. I would totally die that way.
Yeah, we've had
poison
this discussion.
Really? Yeah, I would think to eat them and then I would die. 100%. Because I would be hiding and, like, I would not go to fight.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
I don't know what I'd do if I'm being intense. See, I always was like, oh, I wouldn't go to fight. But then, like.
You would.
But I don't know if I would. I think I wouldn't in, like, a strategic way. Because I wouldn't want to kill anybody.
You'd be smart
but
about it.
I'd protect people. If I saw somebody going after somebody else, I would like, and I really mean that because I saw.
You would like, fight like Hermione.
Yeah. There we go. I like it.
Similar to Katniss.
Oh, shit.
Oh, what house would Katniss be?
She a Gryffindor.
Total
She's
Gryffindor.
She's such a Gryffindor. She's like the most Gryffindor.
Yeah.
What about PETA?
Hufflepuff.
Oh my gosh, with the cake.
Oh my god, yeah.
He's such a puff. And he does crafts on his face.
Yes. Oh my god.
He's such a puff.
And he's just so sweet.
He's so sweet. He's too nice.
He's so tender-hearted.
Too nice. Too puff.
Too pure for the world. In contrast, we got Gale.
Gryffindor?
I think Gryffindor or Slytherin, but I don't think he's a Slytherin.
I don't think so.
I think he's a Gryffindor.
I think
they're both Gryffindor.
I like the idea of him as a Slytherin, but I don't really
like Gryffindor guys that much, and I didn't like him reading.
Yeah, Gryffindor guys can be dicks.
So I'm just like, and usually
Gryffindors
when I
suck.
No, I love Gryffindors, but just the guys can be a lot. Like, yeah. Normally if I'm reading a book and it's a Slytherin guy, I'm in love with him. But if it's a Gryffindor guy, I'm like, And with Gale, I'm like, So I think he's a Gryffindor.
Great. Yeah, I concur.
Finnick.
Oh.
I love the idea of him being a Slytherin, but he's also kind of like reached his peak and he doesn't have any desire to like go anywhere else with it. He just wants the secrets, right?
That's his currency
is the secrets, which I feel like is Ravenclaw to just
I have not read these books in a while. I forgot about all
so
of that.
So you think Slytherin?
I think Slytherin or Ravenclaw.
I think so.
But also, he's very sweet.
I was thinking Hufflepuff, honestly.
He's definitely got some puff.
I don't think he's... I would say, like, maybe Slytherin-Hufflepuff combo.
Slytherin-Puff.
Slytherin-Puff.
Then I want to say Slytherin.
Let's say Slytherin, because we don't have any other Slytherins yet. So
yes.
We
a
can
nice,
be a Slytherin.
Good, hot Slytherin.
All we have to do is name all of the careers. Slytherin.
Very true.
Primrose Everdeen, the hardest ever to sort.
Ravenclaw, because she's really good at like meds and stuff, right?
I figured just Hufflepuff, because that's like her passion is to like heal and take care of. And
she is very caring.
You're right. I think it is
Puff.
I think she's smart because she's a healer.
That makes sense.
But I think it's like nurse.
Smart out of necessity.
Like, yeah, I think she's like, this is what I need. She's hardworking, so maybe that's you know.
Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she Puff.
Hey, Mitch.
He's Squib.
No. Yeah, Filch.
He's Filch.
He's a complex one.
What do you think?
I don't know.
I think he's a Squib.
Or he could be like a rotten Gryffindor, like a Gryffindor gone bad.
He could be.
Oh, Gryffindor gone bad.
You know?
I love that.
Like a Gryffindor that's
he's
like...
He's pretty reckless, honestly.
Yeah, he is.
So
yeah, too reckless for Slytherin.
He doesn't really
He's not Slytherin because he doesn't really care about that.
Okay. Yeah, Gryffindor.
I think he Gryffindor.
I'm a Gryffindor. Here's a tip. Don't die. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Squib.
Totally.
Oh my god, Squib. You can't say Squib.
I like him as a Squib. Okay.
Cinna.
Oh, he is gorgeous. He is
He's the guy that helps with the costumes. God, I'm horrible.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
But
yeah, beautiful costumes, creative.
I think he's a Ravenclaw.
Total Ravenclaw.
But like a Luna.
Rebel, like a rebel Ravenclaw, because he also, you know, like.
I think he's like Luna because he's creative, but he also like battles. Yeah, I like you know? Yeah. Luna was there in the Department of Mysteries.
I like that. That's
and
why
so
I wanted
is Cinna.
Creative, rebellious genius.
Yes. Yeah.
Woo! Yep. Okay. Rue.
Oh.
Gryffindor.
Oh, yes.
Totes.
I mean, yes. Yes. I don't
remember much.
No, because she is a Gryffindor. Because she, like.
No, she is. She's, like, from what I can remember.
Yeah, because she's, like, with Katniss the whole. She's brave.
She is.
For how little she is and the stuff that she's doing. Yeah. I think she's another Gryffindor. Okay. Gryffindor. I think it's kind of like a Harry and Ron situation, like with them together, like another Gryffindor, like part of the pack. Gryffindors like to move in packs, so like, you know, ruin.
I don't think I really have a pack. I have like a lot you of have, people.
No, you have multiple packs. You have multiple packs. You don't have a single pack. You have all these packs. That's why you are Godric Gryffindor.
Wasn't Godric Gryffindor like kind of an asshole though? Like, didn't he steal the
probably
the store? Like, that's what Griphook says. But like then again, goblins. Yeah. You know,
that is Griphook.
Yeah, Griphook thinks that about everybody.
Yeah, who knows?
But I mean, he's probably kind of like a douchebag. Yeah. But because
he's ultimate Gryffindor.
Yeah, but you are not the douchebag.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
No, you're the Hermione Gryffindor. We've already said this. I'd be so honored.
Effie Trinket.
Slytherin.
Yes, totally.
Playing her part in the high society.
Yeah, because she doesn't do anything about it.
Yeah. Okay, great. That's all I got. I mean, we could get into more nitty gritty. Yeah. Like, I could say Snow, but like Slytherin.
Yeah, I feel like some of them were kind of easy.
Yeah. No, these were good.
Ooh, wait, but actually.
What?
What about Coin? President Coin?
Oh.
I think Slytherin.
Because I like the idea that she could be a different kind of villain.
Like who?
Yeah.
Like a Gryffindor.
You think?
Like a Gryffindor that goes bad.
But I think that's the whole thing, though, is that she's like, I think she's more of like the good Slytherin than anything else. Just in the terms of like, if you look at her personality traits, like her whole thing is ambition, right? And like wanting to.
She also seems super calculated.
Yeah, like very calculated. Yeah.
You know?
True.
I don't think she could be a
Gryffindor. I feel like the difference, like, and this is the reason I'm not a Slytherin, is because I'm very like, I know where I'm going, but I'm like, I'm just gonna like keep following my passions, go with the flow, see how it all pans out, and like follow the river.
It's the difference between Jackie and Joe.
Okay.
You are like the ultimate Gryffindor in my mind, and he is the ultimate Slytherin
That's
in my mind.
That's so funny. No wonder we get along so well.
It's so like it's
truly
so,
though. It's no. like because I think that we compliment each. You know,
I think so. I think so. Yeah, you both respect each other.
We have massive respect for each
other. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I can speak for myself. I don't know if he respects me.
He respects you. He loves you. Yeah, definitely.
You just think crazy.
No, you're great. You're wonderful. We all love you, Jackie.
Thank you very much.
Oh my God. And I think that's it. Jackie, is there anything else that you want to promote or say, tell people where to find you or what? Anything?
How
can people find that video that you were talking about?
So that's just, it's called Na 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 Na, and then the last Na is in parentheses. And then if you just search my name, it should be on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, which is also where like my Let's Get Real videos and stuff are. But I haven't posted on there in a while, but that's okay. Where you can see the video. And then, and I occasionally post like weird musical improv on there and like covers and stuff.
Oh, perfect.
Not covers. I don't know why I just said that, but weird musical improv and performances that I do. And then the other thing is that you can go to my website, which is JackieEmerson.com. And then my Insta, Twitter, blah, 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 is all Jackie_Emerson. I'll be honest, I have not been on in a few months, but I will be posting there and promoting stuff in the future. And so just to have. And then if you look up the Music Store LA, I think that's the name of my musical improv troupe.
Oh, perfect.
And what we do is there's like four or five of us. It kind of fluctuates, but we do narrative, long form musical improv, but we're also all playing our own instruments.
Wow.
So we get the name of a musical that doesn't exist. We've got like two pianos on a stage, an accordion, a ukulele, a guitar, and we've got like hand signals for what key we're in. And so we're like making up the songs and rhyming and doing the story and the character while we're also like playing instruments. And I love it because it stretches every part of my brain. I'm also in a Harry Potter improv troupe called The Show That Shall Not Be Named.
Oh my God, I didn't know you were in that.
As of recently.
That's so funny.
The music store one is like really, I really love that one. So, you know,
great.
Check it out. See if we're ever around.
Yeah, if you're in LA, then come see.
Beep, boop, boop. And then I guess my stuff will be like slowly unfolding out there over the next
few years.
So exciting. So we will
just keep your eyes peeled.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Jackie, for being on the podcast. You were such a wonderful guest. It was so interesting hearing your story and kind of, you know, how like performing shaped you as a human and how it's shaping everyone else around you.
I love you guys so much.
We love you too.
I just like, I remember when I was in sixth grade and I thought I didn't really have the internet yet. And I just like, my parents wouldn't let me on it. And I just thought I was the only person that was like so obsessed with Harry Potter. Like,
that
I didn't know it existed.
Jackie.
Did that happen to you too?
That is me.
And I just remember running.
I thought I was alone.
And then I ran into this like random girl from my high school and I started to talk to Harry Potter about her. And she was like, there's this thing called MuggleNet that exists and the Leaky Cauldron where you can go on and get recipes and blah, blah, blah. And I remember that it was one of the most exciting days of my life. And then I joined the Harry Potter Club at school. But it was like, that was amazing. And so the fact that I'm sitting here and talking to you guys right now, like I think that my sixth grade self would be like completely and utterly mind blown that I have friends and people in my life that are as into my geeky things as I am.
That's what I say every day. It makes me so happy. Having Harry Potter friends and people that understand you is like the best thing in the world. It's so hard to like explain that to someone that doesn't get it, but it's like when you've gone for so long thinking that you're like just so weird.
Yeah, no, that's what I was saying before. Of like, I'm like, it's like weird.
Yeah,
like it's like down.
It's like you just, and I didn't have anyone to talk to like about it, and then that's why like the internet is so magical, and why this podcast is so magical too, because that it's a community of nerds that like just care.
So happy.
It's just quality humans, you know. It's all quality humans.
Yeah, because it's people coming together over passion.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's like the thing that drives the universe at the end of the day.
So true. Well, goodbye, Jackie. So nice to see you.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Now, let's read a comment from Apple Podcasts on iTunes. If you haven't done this yet, go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review and comment saying whatever you want about us, yourself, your favorite fandom, your Hogwarts house, if you want to ask us a question, whatever you want. And every week, we're going to read one on the podcast and give someone a shout out.
This one comes from BraverLime812.
Brave Lime.
They said, great. Tessa and Brizzy are great with a capital G. The podcast is great as a Potterhead and a Marvel fan. Really just a giant geek. Thanks for all the laughs you have given me. I am a fantastic geek.
Oh,
I love it.
How cute.
I love just the relating to we're all fantastic geeks.
We are all on the inside.
Secret.
That's been our secret all along, you guys, is that we're all fantastic geeks.
You can find the fantastic geek in
yourself. Of you, in your heart, Simba.
Yes, so thank you, Braver
Your heart
Lime.
Is where you truly live, Remus.
Your heart in here.
In here.
Oh my gosh, Braver Lime, thank you so much for your comment. Again, you guys, make sure to go review and comment on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out and helps the podcast out. And we really appreciate everyone who's left a comment so far.
And I think that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Fantastic Geeks and Where to Find Them.
You are a fantastic geek.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.